hardball hitting with a baseball bat. Kick up your heels, kid, and leave them all flat. What does it mean to be American?
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Most of us have heard of the Supreme Court's decision about campaign finance from 2010 called Citizens United. That very phrase, Citizens United, has come to represent the idea that corporations can spend unlimited money on political campaigns. Most of us have heard of the Supreme Court's decision about campaign finance from 2010 called Citizens United. The very phrase, Citizens United, has come to represent the idea that corporations can spend unlimited money on political campaigns. But is that what Citizens United actually said? And what effect has the decision had on our elections? Today, I'm excited to speak with Jeff Clements, the founder and CEO of American Promise, to learn more about the Citizens United decision and the rise of money in politics. American Promise is a cross-partisan grassroots advocacy organization that promotes a new constitutional amendment, the For Our Freedom Amendment, to, quote, tackle the out-of-control money in our campaigns and elections and overturn the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. Jeff, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks, Josh. Good to be with you.
First, let's talk about the Citizens United decision itself. I think there's a lot of confusion among the public about what the Supreme Court actually held. So can you give us a brief summary of that case?
Sure, Josh. In short, what the Citizens United case did was to invalidate parts of a law called the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, known as McCain-Feingold after its Senate sponsors. It was a federal law that prohibited corporations and unions, for that matter, spending money through independent expenditures to influence the outcome of elections, federal elections. They could have certain PACs, which had limits under this, but they couldn't spend unlimited money under the McCain-Feingold law. The Supreme Court in Citizens United said that violates the First Amendment. And because the case concerned corporations, both a nonprofit corporation named Citizens United that brought the case and corporations that could contribute to spending in at the time the 2008 and then the 2010 federal elections, the Supreme Court made a broad ruling applicable to all corporations, saying the law violated the rights, First Amendment rights of corporations to spend money in elections. Now, that's the short answer. There's a longer answer about Citizens United that's important, I think, for people to understand and led to what today seems to be and is an absolute out-of-control money and politics situation. The bigger story about Citizens United is it's not really about Citizens United alone. The Supreme Court has basically been wrestling with the problem and the intersection of money and free speech in politics since 1976, in the mid-70s, in response to the Federal Election Commission Act, which was a big reform after the Watergate scandals. Led to the resignation of President Nixon, serious scandal. Congress responded. The country was outraged. Anti-corruption laws with limits on spending in federal elections. The Supreme Court weighs all that in a case called Buckley versus Valeo and upholds some of the law, strikes down other parts of the law as violations of the free speech of donors to spend money to influence elections. And basically, it's the first time in American history the First Amendment had been used to invalidate anti-corruption laws that limited spending in elections. A couple of years later, another case called Bellotti in 1978 struck down a Massachusetts law that prohibited corporations spending money in ballot initiative elections. The court said that violates the rights of corporations. And then over the next 30 years or so, we have the Supreme Court and a lot of lawyers and wrestling with the implications of Buckley and basically looking at federal and state laws under the First Amendment microscope. Does the regulation go too far and limit speech, or is it okay as an anti-corruption protection for spending in elections? the cases are all over the place. I think the court and Citizens United saw an opportunity to clarify in their view. And I think they went back to the theory in Buckley that, hey, it's independent spending we're talking about, not direct contributions to candidates. That's an important thing to understand about Citizens United, these independent expenditures, what we now know as super PACs. The court thought those should not be limited because they can't corrupt. So back to Buckley, independent spending is protected by the First Amendment. And essentially, the court said corporations, unions, any other groups are basically groups of people spending money to influence elections. And that's why the First Amendment is important.
So let's dive in here a little bit to some of the stuff you just mentioned with respect to the decision. So the court didn't say corporations are people. That's a kind of a phrase that's thrown around a lot about Citizens United. But the court didn't actually say corporations are people, right?
Yeah, that's right, Josh. And I think there's a couple of things about that. The court invited people to draw that conclusion, I believe. So I think it's a reasonable shorthand, even though technically it's not what the court said. Let me say what I mean by that. So the Supreme Court in the Citizens United case was dealing with a nonprofit corporation called Citizens United. Now, that sounds like something maybe that should have some First Amendment protection, nonprofit corporation. It's, you know, it's involved in advocacy. But the Supreme Court did not limit it to that kind of a corporation. And in Citizens United, the Supreme Court made very clear the corporate form itself, any corporation, has a First Amendment right to spend independent money, i.e. not directly to the campaign, but other than that, it can't be limited. And they did not draw any careful lines. And then I think what the justices in Citizens United did that made the situation worse is kind of, mix up a lot of metaphors about what corporations are. So for-profit corporations, global corporations, mom-and-pop business corporation on Main Street, they're all basically legal entities under usual state law. The court didn't say that. The court described corporations as associations of citizens in Citizens United, which is the justification for protecting First Amendment rights. And that kind of description might make sense in a small nonprofit corporation or even a larger nonprofit corporation. It's a group of people, the NAACP, groups like that. But does it make sense with Exxon? Does it make sense with, you know, Goldman Sachs? Does it make sense with a global corporation that's owned by shareholders all over the world, including sovereign funds? The court didn't tell us that. So I think the conclusion, well, corporations are kind of like people with free speech rights. And the reason people reacted to that viscerally is I think many Americans were thinking more about the big global corporation and the worries they have about that power than the Supreme Court was thinking about at the time.
Yeah. Now, and let's just make sure we emphasize one other thing you mentioned about the case, which is that the case said nothing about bans on corporations giving directly to candidates. This was about the so-called independent expenditure. So the difference is a corporation can't give to either the mom and pop shop or the big company or the candidate, but it can put it up its own billboard, right, or run its own TV ad saying, you know, we support this candidate without coordinating with that candidate and without giving money. So that's the difference between donations and independent expenditures. So let's talk numbers. After the decision, what kind of rise in this independent expenditures, this corporation spending money on their own political advocacy, did we see?
Well, we've seen exponential rise in spending in federal elections. In 2008, before Citizens United, federal spending was just under $5.3 billion, federal elections. In 2020, it was $14 billion. It'll be over $20 billion in 2024, I'm confident. There's another thing about the numbers, though, that I want to emphasize, and it also shows that this isn't just about Citizens United. It's not only about the cases that came in the years before Citizens United, but in the years after Citizens United, the Supreme Court became very aggressive about taking new cases to underline just how serious they were about limiting the ability of Americans to pass laws that would restrict spending in elections. There was a case out of Montana that struck down a anti-corruption law that limited corporate money in Montana elections for 100 years, struck down without a hearing after the Montana Supreme Court had upheld the law. That basically invalidated laws in over 20 states that had limited money in elections. The court took a case from Arizona involving public financing of elections, struck down the Arizona law. The court took a case that applied to what they called aggregate contributions to federal campaigns, and again struck down that law that had stood for a long time. And then there's of course a case called Speech Now out of the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals that applied Citizens United to decide that basically the PAC limits were also unconstitutional, which is why we have super PACs. So the net result of all, not only Citizens United, but this wave of cases between 2010 and 2014 or so, is that all kinds of avenues for unregulated money opened up. And what you've had is essentially a slow start. So it went from about $5 billion to about $6 billion in 2012 as these cases started to be decided. But after 2012, the message was clear and the floodgates opened. And we've had a doubling, more than doubling, of federal election spending each presidential year. So 2012, $6.2 billion goes to, in 2016, I'm sorry, yeah, you've got, in the total cost of the election in 2016, $6 billion, doubling now in the 4 years to 2020 to over $14 billion. And I think most estimates for the people have for 2024 is that that'll double again.
Yeah, just an amazing amount of money. And, you know, we said, you know, you said kind of before Citizens United or just after, the total amount of spending in federal elections was, what'd you say, $5 billion? That's already a huge amount, right? And you know, the amount in recent elections has just eclipsed that. You know, you mentioned unregulated money. We've also heard the term dark money a lot. Dark money meaning money that's spent by entities that does not disclose, where the entity does not disclose who they are. You can hide who you are so you can spend the money, but no one can tell who it is. So let's say I have a ton of money and want to use it to promote a candidate, but I want to hide my identity. How do I do that?
Yeah. So if you don't mind, Josh, I'd like to say one more thing about the total spending in elections and how that has grown, because I think sometimes the numbers are so big that it just seems kind of abstract. I think the other thing that's happened, another way to look at those numbers is look at Senate races, which people thought like a $12 million Senate race was an expensive Senate race back in the 2000s and 2008s. We now have $200, $300, $500 million Senate races. We now have super PACs spending millions in city council races. So this is really hitting home, the unregulated money in elections. And the dark money that you mentioned is also moving through these same channels. And it is not just in presidential races. It's not just in Senate races. You have dark money super PACs affecting district attorney elections in local communities. And here's how it works. Because the Supreme Court has basically stripped the ability to have guardrails around money in politics, anyone who wants to hide the money has, including foreign governments and foreign intelligence operations, have ample ways to do it. So if a corporation or a limited liability company or a nonprofit or a PAC, now known as super PACs, all have a so-called First Amendment right to spend unlimited money, and you have money, you can just move it through all of these entities. There's no reason it has to stop. And nobody who actually wants to hide would put up their own billboard, including or TV commercial, including a corporation or a billionaire. You would put it into a 501c4 nonprofit corporation, which would transfer it to a super PAC, which could then transfer it to a group that another group that doesn't disclose donors, and so on. So there's this layering that makes it very difficult to trace the money. And since what's called 501c4s, nonprofits don't have to identify their contributors, even though PACs do disclose where their money's coming from to the Federal Election Commission, you can go pull the FEC reports and you read, oh, the super PAC's disclosing its money and the money's coming from Majority Forward, whatever that is, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's how dark money moves. And it's now billions of dollars moving into the system that nobody knows where it's coming from.
So, you know, you've tracked the sheer amount of money that's entered politics as a result of the Citizens United decision. You wrote a book in 2014 titled Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. So are you optimistic about democracy, given all of this and given the influx of outside influences that seem to have such a big impact on campaigns and elections?
I am optimistic. And that may sound weird, but I'd like to say why. You know, my book was 10 years ago now. In 2014, this thing had just been warming up and it was a serious problem then. I not only would write a different book, I'm going to write a different book in the next year or so about the current situation, which not only kind of validates the concern about corporate spending, but it turns out, you know, the impacts of billionaire spending and the doors that have opened to foreign spending and other dangers and the destabilizing effects of this system because of what I view as a reckless experiment by the Supreme Court in basically making up law that was never true about the First Amendment just has terrible, terrible consequences. But here's why I'm optimistic is Americans really get it. You don't have to convince anyone about the problem of money in politics anymore. We have, as you said at the outset, a constitutional amendment to fix this, and I'm happy to say more about that. But what I want to say is the reason we're cross-partisan at American Promise, and we are Republicans, Democrats, Independents on our staff, on our board, among our volunteers, and among the millions of Americans who've actually stepped up to help get this done, we don't care who you vote for. There are a lot of divisions in this country about voting and the parties and the candidates. But on this issue, there's no division. Americans are united. And I have the blessing, actually, of my work of talking to Americans in states all around the country who have accepted how bad it is and accepted the challenge, which is real, of passing and ratifying a constitutional amendment and embrace it and celebrate it and are finding the work to get it done with their fellow Americans that transcends the divisions and the challenges of our current day to set this in stone for a good foundation for anti-corruption for the next century to be something that is not only incredibly encouraging and gives one good spirits about our country that you don't see every day in the media, but also we have so many wins. The feedback loop on this is incredible. We've won 22 states are now backing this amendment. We've won 7 ballot initiatives. We've never lost. November in Maine passed a constitutional amendment support resolution with the state of Maine, as well as a prohibition on foreign government spending in elections. 86% yes of those voters. So that's what I'm seeing. I get to see amidst the mess of this country a robust constitutional conversation of the American people that disagrees with the Supreme Court and their conservatives, their progressives, their everything in between, and they're uniting to say, you know what, the court really got it wrong. And Americans know what free speech is. Americans know what corruption is. And the reason I'm optimistic is I see an America that's actually fixing these problems, and it's gonna get the Constitution back on track.
Jeff Clements is the CEO of American Promise and the author of the book, Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. Jeff, thanks so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you, Josh.
Josh, thanks for getting Jeff Clements to clarify the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling. Is there any way to put an end to politicians spending so much of their time fundraising and owing favors to special interests?
One solution that a lot of places have looked at is public financing. This is where you get government money to run the campaign. Candidates who opt into public financing agree to various restrictions on their campaigning in exchange for these public funds. In fact, when you do your federal taxes, there's a spot to designate $3 of your taxes to the Presidential Public Financing Fund. That won't increase your taxes. It just says you want to allocate $3 of your tax bill to public funding for presidential candidates. Unfortunately, with the rise in the cost of campaigning for president, no major party candidates have opted into public financing for their general election campaigns since John McCain did so in 2008. But that said, some places are experimenting with novel public financing solutions for their state and local elections. Seattle has pioneered the use of democracy vouchers. The city sends every voter four $25 vouchers for voters to give to mayoral candidates or city council candidates who have opted into the public financing system, who have agreed to limit their spending, and to abide by additional disclosure rules. Through this program, candidates aren't just campaigning for votes. They're also asking voters for their democracy vouchers, which the candidates then turn into the city for campaign money. It's a novel idea that has increased the number of people who give to a campaign. In 2023, around 30,000 voters used democracy vouchers in Seattle City Council elections, pouring nearly $2.4 million of public money into candidates' campaigns. Although candidates who reject democracy vouchers and instead rely on massive spending from outside groups have still won many elections in the city, the program has increased the number of people who agree to run for local office.
What is a fun fact that has to do with the Citizens United ruling?
Did you know that a corporation from Maryland ran for Congress? That's right. In 2010, after the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United, Murray Hill Incorporated launched a campaign for Congress. Let's listen to their campaign ad.
It's a new day. Till now, corporations influence politics with high-paid lobbyists and backroom deals. However, as much as corporate interests gave to politicians, we could never be absolutely sure they would do our bidding. But today, thanks to an enlightened Supreme Court, corporations now have all the rights the Founding Fathers meant for us. It's our democracy. We bought it, we paid for it, and we're going to keep it. That's why Murray Hill Incorporated is taking democracy's next step, running for Congress. The way we see it, corporate America has been the driving force behind Congress for years, but now it's time we got behind the wheel ourselves. Murray Hill Incorporated will bring enlightened self-interest and corporate accounting to government to put business first. It is a vision for the future we can all be proud of. Now that democracy is truly for sale, Murray Hill Incorporated is offering top dollar. Vote Murray Hill Incorporated for Congress for the best democracy money can buy.
I'm Eric Hensel, designated human for Murray Hill Incorporated. We approve this message.
Of course, the point for Murray Hill's founder and so-called designated human was to take the logic of Citizens United, that corporations can spend unlimited funds on campaigns, to the extreme. Maryland election officials ultimately rejected Murray Hill Incorporated's candidacy, both because it was, quote, not a human being, and because it was not eligible to serve in Congress. Under the U.S. Constitution, members of Congress must be 25 years old when elected, and Murray Hill was incorporated in 2005, so had been around for only 5 years at the time.
What is one more thing that we can do to support democracy?
Find out who's spending money on campaigns. The Federal Election Commission runs a great website where you can look up who has donated to candidates for federal office. You can also search by donor. Want to see if your favorite celebrity has donated to a presidential or congressional candidate? You can find that info on fec.gov. Just click on campaign finance data and then look up contributions from specific individuals.
Dream.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.